Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, on a somewhat later show tonight. Doing a little bit of fantasy football. Okay, actually doing a lot of fantasy football. Going to start off with a couple other things going on in the world of sports. Seth Kamen, Sean Palmer, the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show off of Blog Talk Radio, backsportspage.com. Well, Mr. Palmer, we're now going into training camp, and usually this is when everyone's talking baseball, but the only person that seems to be being discussed is a 13-year-old girl from Philly, Monet Davis, who seems to have been taken the world, for lack of a, taken the sports world by storm. And it's pretty amazing. That Philly team is playing Nevada on Wednesday with a chance the winner are going to play for the U.S. Pretty much in the U.S. semifinals. And she has been their star pitcher. She has been accepted within the team. Is this just a great story, or is there really any further meaning to this? Is there anything more to it than that?
Well, I think we should start by saying hi, which I will.
Then hi, Sean.
Start by saying, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Station, because we've come to the midpoint of August, which is where Seth gets his mojo back, because baseball is not the only thing on the agenda. And here we are with the fantasy football preview this week. We're going to do the college football preview next week, and then on Labor Day we will be doing the pro football preview, right before the kickoff of the pro season. So, basically, welcome back, Seth.
Thank you.
Actually, it's not even Labor Day. It would be Labor Day. So welcome back, Seth, to the sports world, because while he is talking Little League, you know he's chomping at the bit for the college football preview next week.
Woo! Can't wait.
So let's get back to what you asked. Should we be making more of this than we are? Well, there are pundits like myself, and I call myself a pundit, who look at the bigger picture, who say, could this young lady continue down this road and become a major leaguer? Or even a minor leaguer, because even the minor leagues would be an impressive feat at this point. And then there are people like yourself, and we talk pre-show, that say, why are we even thinking along those lines? Why don't we just enjoy it for what it is? And Seth, you're right. I mean, I think a little bit longer in the term, and because it's been such a big craze in that she's doing this on a national stage where players like Sean Burroughs, Chris Drury, the Little League World Series, Williamsport, Trumbull, Connecticut, I mean, all these places, and now Philadelphia. Philadelphia is not a baseball town. It's more of a basketball town. And if the Eagles are going to win the NFC East, which I believe that they will, maybe a football town this year. But the fact is, she has taken the baseball world by storm. Mike Trout has tweeted about her. Giancarlo Stanton, I believe, has tweeted about her. It's been an amazing ride. And in a time where, and I was just noticing this right before the show, that Oklahoma just suspended their top running back for the season because of theft or burglary or a misdemeanor, and you have Notre Dame on the other side with the academic fraud, you're looking for stories like this. I mean, when I saw that Oklahoma had suspended their top running back, I said, again? You know, how many stupid idiots does it take to make a football team? I mean, you got four in Notre Dame, you got one in Oklahoma, I'm sure you got other people along the way. So this is a great story, and you're right. It shouldn't be looked at any more than this, just a great story.
Yeah. I mean, it is, look, as you said, this is an era where the positives are very rarely outweigh the negatives. And it's nice to have a fresh face, a fun 13-year-old kid just kind of enjoying the show and taking it for what it is. Looking at it, you're talking about a sport which has obviously never had a female professional, a sport where Jackie Robinson crossed the color barrier 60-47, so almost 70 years ago. And actually, the number of African-American baseball players in the majors is plummeting and is at about 7%. Now, I'm not sure if there are any long-term ramifications of this. I don't see a girl playing in the major leagues anytime in the near future. I don't know why the baseball, I mean, I have some idea on why the African-American population in baseball has skewed downward, and I don't think this is going to change it. But there is something to be said for just kind of sitting back and saying, wow, this is a fun story. And it's really fun to see a 13-year-old girl enjoy, kind of reveling in this with her teammates.
Yeah, let's understand, this would not be any different if this was really a 13-year-old guy that was doing the same thing. I mean,
oh, I disagree.
She could be wiped out. No, I'm saying in the different that it would be it's any more of a good story. It's still a good story. She's been wiped out. And then she goes and plays shortstop and hits well. I mean, every year in the Little League World Series, you have that guy, whoever that guy is. And this year, you just have that girl. So, I mean, do I think that it's more of a good story? Sure. But it's still a good story. And I think the Little League World Series, or Little League in general, has gotten a bad rap. I mean, I certainly remember being an umpire and throwing parents out of the gates because they took the game just way too seriously. I mean,
wait. You punished someone for somebody else taking something too seriously?
Oh, yeah. So I was umpiring. I was 16 years old, and I was umpiring a Little League game. And I was calling balls and strikes, and a parent did not exactly agree with my strike zone. Happens in just about every level of baseball. You have somebody that doesn't agree with the strike zone. And he came out and argued. And I said, sir, this is my strike zone. I'm sorry you don't agree with it. Please go back to your bench. And the next batter out, he argued with me again. Sir, you're either going to go back to your bench or I'm going to kick you out of the game. And he continued to argue with me again. So this went on for about an inning and a half. Then eventually I said, you're gone. You're out of the game. This is the manager of the team. Now, nobody on the other side, nobody on his side other than him was arguing with me. It was just him. Even the players were like, all right, whatever. So basically I banished him to his car because if he didn't go to his car, his team was going to forfeit. Because while I kicked him out of the game, he was still arguing with me behind the backstop. So in an age where parents take these games a little bit too seriously at times, this is a great story. So all in all, fantastic stuff going on in the Little League World Series, and there is every year. You just hear about it a little bit more this year. So the teenagers to the growing, maturing, well, I would say to the pre-adolescents to the teenagers, the 18, 19-year-olds, Notre Dame being a beacon, or what was a beacon, of football pride, academic pride.
Sorry, I yawned at football pride. Was that wrong?
No, I'm not saying like this year. I'm saying over the course of history.
Okay.
Over the course of history, look, I can say the Montreal Canadiens are an epitome of hockey royalty. Hasn't happened in the last 10 years, but they're still hockey royalty. I say Notre Dame is basically college football royalty over the course of history. Academically, they are in the top 10% of all colleges. And yet, over the last couple of years, a lot has gone wrong with Brian Kelly's program. A lot,
Kelly. Yeah. You lose your starting quarterback, Everett Golson, last year. And, of course, this year there have been four players already suspended indefinitely for cheating. And it's, this is a school where who in their own mind are above this. And a school where the academics actually matter. So the question is, are they taking in people who are just not smart enough to do this kind of work? Are they taking people who are just not academically possible, you know, academically suited for Notre Dame in order to bring the football program back from, you know, for all intents and purposes, a 20-year period of mediocrity? You know, they won a title in 88, I think it was, with Muholtz. And they made, and they had some great players with Tim Brown and Rocket Ishmael in the early late 80s, early 90s. And then Holtz kind of left under some certain circumstances. And they've had Ty Willingham. They've had Charlie Weiss. Brian Kelly seemed like the best fit. And in this first year, they took him to a pretty mediocre Notre Dame team, made it to the national championship game, led by Monte Tau, who we all know had his own issues. And last year, Everett Golson, their starting quarterback, violates the student honor code. This year, top receiver Devaris Daniels, quarterback Kyrie Russell, defensive end Ishak Williams, and linebacker Kendall Moore, all suspended for cheating, for academic fraud. This is not what is expected from Notre Dame football. This is not what is expected from Notre Dame University. And the question is,
you know, the thing is, not to interrupt you, but the thing is, this is what I expect from Notre Dame University. I know you're probably looking at me cross-eyed, but the fact is, I expect them to clamp down on cheating.
Oh, okay.
I know that there are many colleges out there that would look the other way with this, and have. Right, we have the whole North Carolina scandal. We have back in the 80s, we have 80s, early 90s, even my alma mater did it. So, I mean, the academic probation, Louisville has done it. I mean, Minnesota had people writing their papers. I mean, it goes on and on and on. But if you're going to give it up to Notre Dame, and we had Charlie Weiss on the show last year, I believe, and he said, Notre Dame takes pride in their academics. While football is a priority, academia is the priority. So this is what I take from Notre Dame. Now, is there an equal balance that could make a top-flight football program if you deal with the academics this way? I don't know. But I respect Notre Dame for doing what they did. They certainly could have brushed this under the rug.
No, I absolutely agree. And credit to John Jenkins, who's, I believe, is the president. He's the most well-known. Yeah, he's the president of Notre Dame for doing this. And I agree. I do give them credit. I'm not taking anything away from that. There are schools where there is success in this realm. Stanford is a top five school in the country. And they've had very successful the last 5 to 10 years, and we haven't heard any issues. But yeah, most of these, I agree, most schools it would be swept under the rug. And I do give credit to Notre Dame for not doing this. Now Notre Dame's schedule this year is going to be ugly. Michigan, Stanford, USC, Florida State, Arizona State, and Louisville. It probably wasn't going to be a great year prior to this. It certainly isn't going to be going forward. The question is, does this put Brian Kelly's job in jeopardy?
I don't think it's in jeopardy at all. If nothing else, Brian Kelly has been ahead of the pack. He brought his team to a BCS championship game where, even if Seth doesn't think they deserve it, or deserved it, he did do it. And they got blown
out.
Did. But the fact is, he did it, right? How many coaches in the NCAA can do that, can say that. He's never tried to, well, from what we know, he's never tried to sweep anything under the rug. He's very well liked in Notre Dame circles.
Yes, he is.
So, I mean, I think after all the problems that they had, and problems being a word that probably would not describe this, but let's say all the non-success they had with Charlie Weiss and Ty Willingham.
And George O'Leary, and George O'Leary, for that matter.
Right. And the whole George O'Leary incident. I think Notre Dame's done right, and I think they'll keep Brian Kelly. I don't think his job – do you believe he's on the hot seat? I don't think he's anywhere close
no.
to it.
No, I don't think so either. But I think if there is another issue, someone's going to take the hit somewhere down the line. And
well, I mean, the one thing that we have yet to talk about in regards to Brian Kelly is the gentleman that was killed, right?
Oh, who blew up on the
right. So I mean, his tenure has certainly been clouded at Notre Dame. But how much of that really is his fault?
Is it attributable to him?
Fraud. Yeah. Is academic fraud his fault?
No.
Right.
But it
I
also
mean,
goes to the argument of, are you bringing in people who can succeed legitimately at Notre Dame? Because Notre Dame has a higher standard than many other, most other universities.
I think in some ways you challenge young gentlemen. You put it forth and you let them succeed or fail. And in this case, they have not succeeded. But there are different ways than going about fraud. I mean, we don't know what exactly the fraud was, but rumors are that somebody else took their exams. Look.
And wrote their papers. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one thing to fail. It's another thing to cheat. So.
Well, I have done much of one, not as much as the other.
So, I mean, if it actually comes out that Brian Kelly knew the same way Butch Davis knew in North Carolina, well, then we have a different scenario on our hands. But until that time comes, he's not even near the Phil Munchap hot seat, who I think is on the hottest seat in college football this year.
He very well could be. And we'll discuss Florida and the rest of the SEC and whether this is finally the year that the SEC, now obviously Florida State won the championship last year, but no one was going to argue that number two and number three teams in the country were from the SEC. But this is, I guess, the big question is the SEC having won seven championships in a row prior to last year, is this the year they finally take a small step back where there do seem to be some chinks in the armor? And
yeah.
You know, we'll discuss that. We'll discuss the college football we'll discuss the college football playoff. We'll talk about all sorts of things along those lines next week. But this week is a fantasy football week. And
Agreed. We're
all starting to get ready. Everybody's kind of getting a little excited. There's not too many guys I know that are not in a fantasy league. Everyone I know has done it for years. It's fun. And it gives you bragging rights. And
There is one guy that's certainly not ready.
And who would that be?
His name is Eli Manning. He is not ready.
Yeah. Eli Manning is not ready for too much. I know that Odell Beckham, I believe, made the comment that he thought this would be the best offense in the NFL. Odell, it's very nice of you to say that. And as a Giants fan, I really hope it's right. But when your starting quarterback goes one for seven yards, and it's a you know, and you're playing a new offense with a completely new offensive line, it's a little hard for me to see that.
Well, let's,
and that they
let's
won the game doesn't make
that,
me feel too much better.
Well, let's start on that then. Is Eli well? Let's start at the quarterback position. I mean, is Eli Manning even a QB1 in a 12-team league?
No.
Is he a QB2 in a 12-team league?
Yes, I believe he would be.
Okay. See, I have a hard time especially teams that have two quarterbacks and have to play two quarterbacks, I have a hard time relying on Eli Manning for anything this year. I mean, I was looking down the stats, and there may be, I understand that would mean that there needs to be 24 better quarterbacks than Eli Manning in a fantasy league. And I think he comes in just about 24.
He comes in, I would put him somewhere in the 17 to 20 range.
So that means he's better than 14 NFL quarterbacks in a fantasy league.
Well, why don't we start going through our fantasy?
I'm struggling with 14. I really am. I just don't see where that comes in. So we could certainly look at this and see where we come in, but he's one of those guys that is on my no way in hell list. Are we drafting him?
I'll remember that. As Mr. Palmer defends his Back Sports Page championship, his Back Sports Page fantasy football championship this year. So
that is true. Now let me say something, okay? In that Back Sports Page league, it is a requirement to play two quarterbacks. So he will certainly not be one of my two starting quarterbacks under any circumstances. I would rather have Matt Cassel this year than have Eli Manning as a starting quarterback in any league that I have. And that's saying a lot, because Matt Cassel may not play more than 2 weeks.
That does not say too much for Mr. Manning. A potential borderline, as people in New York tend to think, a potential borderline Hall of Fame quarterback who's just coming off a brutal year. I don't think so. So, but I know a lot of people do. So who would be your top five quarterbacks?
My top five quarterbacks are pretty simple. It's Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning. Wait, I'm missing people. I love Philip Rivers this year. No, I do. I love Philip Rivers this year. And other than that, for the fifth, who am I missing? Oh, and Cam Newton. Those are my top five. And strong six going to Matt Stafford. But Stafford, to me, it is all or nothing every single year.
Here's my one
caveat. Unless you are in a league that plays two quarterbacks or that has two quarterbacks or quarterbacks are 6 points each, I don't draft a quarterback till round five. I just think there's too much of the same depth. So there's my caveat.
You would not take – now, where does that – now, pretty much you're almost talking about a tier system. Now, do you use tier systems for fantasy?
At times I do. It really depends on the type of league I'm in. For a two-quarterback team, I certainly would use a tier system. I generally do not go after one guy. I generally do not say I need to have a Drew Brees. I need to have a Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning. One of those three, sure. And that's what we mean by tier systems. So you go after one guy in the tier. But those are my five or six guys that I look at as probably tier one. Well, Stafford's probably tier two, at the beginning of tier two, along with Colin Kaepernick and Tom Brady.
I don't think there's much argument in the top three quarterbacks. The question, as you said, is the order is up to you. To tell you I would take Brees over Manning or Rodgers over Brees, It's pretty hard to distinguish between the three. As good as Manning was last year, I think you have the second tier to me is Stafford, is Robert Griffin the third if he's healthy, which supposedly he is, but again he's adapting to a new offensive playbook under Jay Gruden. I really like Jay Cutler this year. I think that offense.
Because we have them.
Yes, we do. We also, Mr. Palmer and I are also actually are a co-owner of a team in the Nabate Isles Fantasy Football League.
And I actually give a shout out to Nabate, who's flying out on Friday to try out for his Sports Jeopardy show, which I did not get called back on. So best of luck to you, Mr. Isles.
Now,
and can't we, I'm sorry.
Where do you put Andrew Luck in this lovely equation?
Well, the problem is this. I would have Luck probably in the middle of a tier two. I wish he had some running help. Vic Ballard's out for the year. Trent Richardson can't be worse than he was last year. Ahmad Bradshaw only played 3 games last year. So, but you look at the wideouts they have. Reggie Wayne is back. T.Y. Hilton is very solid. Akeem Nicks has a lot to prove, but could become a very steady player. Luck can also score on his feet. I'm a big fan of Luck as a fantasy. He would be a middle to low, probably number one for me. And he'll be a top 5 MVP candidate as well.
So who's your one undervalued guy at the quarterback position? So a guy that is probably going a lot lower than you would think and you would want based on upside. I'll give you an example. My guy for undervalued is Jake Locker. This is a make-or-break year for Jake Locker. I think he's got some weapons in Tennessee. I think he's got a quarterback coach and a coach that was a quarterback coach and offense coordinator at Wisenhunt. I think he's going to play. And whenever Jake Locker plays, and that's the big question with Jake Locker is how much is he going to play? Whenever he plays, he puts up numbers. And I think he's the undervalued guy. He's going a lot lower. He's going in the 10th or 11th round in snake drafts. And
I'll be honest, I'm shocked he's going that high. I'm genuinely surprised he's going that high. Locker to me
His ADP is advanced average draft position in the ESPN leagues is 170. I'm sorry. So it's probably in the 15 range.
Yeah, that would sound about better. That would sound better. In the mocks I've done, I haven't seen him taken. I really haven't. He hasn't shown me anything to think that he could, A, stay healthy. You know, they have a rookie running back. This is going to start, so we don't know what we're going to get out of that with Bishop Sankey from Washington. Their wideouts, now that I have finally given up on Kenny Britt, which has kind of been a running joke for a while, are Kendall Wright and Justin Hunter are talented but young. He's a quarterback. The one nice thing is it is a division that is not particularly strong. I don't see it. He was a guy that was picked too early based on potential, not really results. And the upside is there, but I don't see it coming into play this year. A guy undervalued, I'm almost laughing as I said, because I never figured he'd be a starter. There's two people that come to mind. One is Josh McCown down in Tampa. Now, the problem with Tampa is their offensive line. If they're able to trade for Boone from San Fran, and I think it's Alex Boone, to try to replace Carl Nix, who looks like he's pretty much going to be forced to retire. I love Vincent Jackson as a one. They have Mike Evans, the superstar wideout from Texas A&M. They had a solid rookie tight end last year in Tim Wright. They have the muscle hamster, if you can stay healthy, and Doug Martin coming back from injury. It's a division with New Orleans, Atlanta, and Carolina, where Carolina has a nice defense, but they've been kind of broken up a little bit. New Orleans has a good safety pair, but that's about it. And no one's really terrified of Atlanta's defense. I think there's some room for some noise down there in Tampa. And the other quarterback I actually want to mention is someone who was at one point ranked among the top 5 as a QB, both in fantasy and as a player. And as his reputation has taken a hit, he's kind of fallen back, and that's Ben Roethlisberger. who I think has finally kind of steadied up the offense after a couple of shaky 2 years. Antonio Brown is a solid number one. They have the new guy who the name is escaping me. They have Dry Archer. Thank you. They have some talent out there, and it's not a tough division. Cincy's very good, but not overwhelming. Baltimore's defense is not really going to remind you of 2001, and the Browns are, well, they're the Browns.
They're the Browns.
So
we'll be looking for next week in our Namate Isles draft. We'll be looking at Ben Roethlisberger pretty heavily. We have decided as a duo to protect Jay Cutler at, I believe, a $13, $260 auction draft. And our next big decision is at the running back position. I think this is a good segue to the running back position.
Well, before we even get there, the one thing I do want to bring up, is there anyone you think is overrated at the quarterback?
There are plenty of overrated quarterbacks. Come on. I mean,
from a fantasy perspective,
is an overrated player. I mean, if you're looking just overrated quarterbacks in general for fantasy, well, Tony Romo, if he could ever stay healthy, would be great. But I mean, he's overrated. Robert Griffin III, to me, is incredibly overrated, based on his legs, and he never stays healthy. EJ Manuel, same concept.
Does anyone really heavily rate EJ Manuel, though?
No, but people look at him as a runner, and running quarterbacks make a lot of yardage. Can you make a point for every 10 yards? But a guy that I'd like to point out that I believe is overrated, well, I believe everybody's saying is overrated, but I like him this year, Sam Bradford. I if there's one guy that I would go out on a limb for, or even over Locker, it would be Sam Bradford this year. This is the year, if Bradford doesn't cut it this year, he's going to be cut. And that'll be the end of the Sam Bradford year in the Rams. And I think the Rams have a lot of offensive potential. So I really like him. But we got to keep moving on. So who's your overrated guy?
There's so many. The one that comes to mind, and it's not really his fault, is Cam Newton. Because who in the heck is he going to throw the ball to? They weren't very good last year, and they lose Brandon LaFell and Steve Smith. You bring in Kelvin Benjamin as a number one pick, who was raw at Florida State. Greg Olsen is a nice tight end, no question about it. But you have no wideouts, nothing. Jason Avant is not the answer. I see Newton getting frustrated. I kind of see a step back from where he was last year.
Okay, so let's move on to the running backs. We do have about 25 minutes, and we got to get through a couple of positions. So Seth and I have decided to keep Le'Veon Bell, at 17, which I think is an incredible value for Le'Veon Bell. He's one of those guys that will get the ball, absolutely get the ball. We're debating whether to keep Alfred Morris at 32. And I left you a message yesterday. I think that's a good solid keeper at 32. I like Jay Gruden last year, ran Giovanni Bernard a lot, catches the ball out of the backfield. Robert Griffin is not going to be running as much this year. I'm coming around on protecting Morris at 32. What do you think?
Not sold on it, and this is why. Morris hasn't shown the ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. Now, that may be simply because of the offense that was being run. But no one has accused him of having the hands of a LeSean McCoy. And he is a very good runner. And I do like him this year, especially with the Redskins adding DeSean Jackson and Jordan Reed coming back, which should open up some fronts instead of having Nate in front against Morris. It's a question to be discussed later on, and pretty much I think our question will be him or Jason Witten. But it's an interesting point. The problem is, after you have that top four, top five running backs, it seems like there's just a mush of 10 to 15 running backs in the second tier. And he's in that.
The first tier we know is Adrian Peterson, LeSean McCoy, Jamaal Charles, and Matt Matthew Forte, right? I mean, those are the guys
yes.
that are running and catching the ball and don't get hurt, those four guys. So the next tier is probably Marshawn Lynch, Eddie Lacy, Arian Foster. And I agree with you, in that third tier, they're all there. It's Doug Martin, DeMarco Murray, Le'Veon Bell, Zach Stacy, Alfred Morris, Giovanni Bernard. I'm not sure if I put Monte Ball in that or Reggie Bush, but that's where we are. And then you come down to the guys that are part-timers, like C.J. Spiller and Frank Gore, who seems to always be around. But I think Morris in this new system will be good. Like you said, we can discuss this later. But the high riser right now is Giovanni Bernard, who's going 14th overall, 14th in the running back position in the ESPN mock drafts. I like him, but there's a whole lot of running back competition now in Cincinnati, and Jay Gruden
yeah,
is no longer there.
Yeah, I don't see it. I like Bernard as well. However, you draft the speedster in Jeremy Hill from Arizona. They still have Green Ellis, who's more of the power guy. And I realize that he is – Bernard is more of what they expect – is more of the Reggie Bush scat back than a power runner. I don't know if I see him as high as everybody else. And I'm actually a guy who roots for Cincinnati. And I don't know if I see Gio Bernard that high. Monte Ball has been, to me, the one that has flown up the charts. But I'm not quite sure if that's based on what the expect, based on anything more than he is now going to be the starting running back with no Sean Moreno leaving Denver for Miami, and that anyone can run against probably a 5 or 6 man front, because Denver with Emmanuel Sanders, Wes Welker, and Demaryius Thomas, in addition to Julius Thomas, are going to it's such a pass heavy offense that there's no way to really stop anyone in the running game. So I've seen him as high as number 7 overall. I've seen him as low as the mid
third
round. Yeah. I've seen
Wait,
him as
number 7 overall?
Overall.
Wow. I can't see him going that high.
I don't really understand it.
In a non-keeper league where you have everybody available, he's not even my 7th running back.
No, he's not mine either.
It's not even close. So give me your overrated guy here. Who do you think is going, besides Monte Ball, which you obviously have just said it, who else is going way too high for your opinion?
The name that keeps coming, there's two names that kind of keep coming back to me. One is a guy who's been phenomenal for several years, and I just think he takes a step back this year. I think he's going to start to grind down a little bit, and that's Marshawn Lynch in Seattle. As big and tough as he is, he's been, you know, Pete Carroll has run him to death. They have Christian Michael and Robert Turbin, two very capable backups who are kind of chomping at the bit for some more playing time. I think Lynch, I don't think his quality goes down. I think they use him less this year and start to get and kind of save him a bit for the playoffs. I think a lot of the overrated. I'm not sure how much I really love Zach Stacy. I know everybody seems extremely fond of him. I think that was also more because the quarterback in St. Louis were not very good last year because Bradford was injured. Darrell Richardson was just a bust, as both Sean and I know. But his average wasn't great after the first couple games. He doesn't really catch the ball very well. He's not a great blocker. I don't know if it'll be Isaiah Pede or someone else. I don't see Stacy as a second-round pick, which is where he seems to be going.
Okay. I mean, if I'm looking at this chart, which I'm looking at all the running backs right now, the two guys that I think that are drafted way higher than they probably should be are number one is Doug Martin. I am not a fan of Doug Martin, and I am certainly not a fan of that offensive line down in Tampa. I think he's going to be held back by that. They do have two quality wideouts now, as Seth had mentioned before, in Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson. I think Martin will be will be asked to block a lot more than he will be asked to run this year. So
very
I don't
well
like
be true.
Him at all. At all. And the second guy that I don't like is Ben Tate. Just because you become a starting running back doesn't mean that you're going to do well, as we learned in Darrell Richardson's case. The curse of Darrell Richardson. And for those that are unaware, Seth and I both spent a lot of good auction money on Darrell Richardson last year, along with Felix Jones.
Hence why.
I drafted Darrell Richardson. Yeah, which is why we did not make the playoffs.
And probably should not be admitting this prior to doing a fantasy football preview claiming to be
pundits. Look. Every fantasy player has their good teams and their bad teams. There's nothing wrong with that. I won a championship. You've made the playoffs in several leagues last year. You're going to have good drafts and bad drafts. I put a lot into Darrell Richardson last year, thinking he was the answer in St. Louis. Just wasn't there. We all make bad decisions. But I think Ben Tate is one of those as well. Way too high up just because he's a starter. The two guys that I love that are going way too low for my taste, Toby Gerhardt in Jacksonville, Gus Bradley is building that team just like Seattle, and I think that that's a running attack waiting, especially since there's no Justin Blackmon right now, and they have Chad Henne at the quarterback, who I also like. Ironically, I like Chad Henne more than Eli Manning, but that's another discussion. And for those that get PPR and return yards, Andre Ellington in Phoenix, in Arizona, going to get a lot of touches and a lot of yards.
Well, before we even move further, just a quick, actually, you're getting a rare breaking news update. Braxton Miller, the All-American candidate from Ohio State, shoulder injury, may be out for the season. Ooh. So for all those Big Ten fans who are waiting for the inevitable Ohio State-Michigan State game with the Rose Bowl on the line, we may be putting some pause on that for a little while. Like
and
the Toby Gerhardt
Michigan call. Fans that are, wait, and then you have to give props to all those Michigan fans that are going, yes, right about now.
Yeah, but Michigan will be 7-4, so no one's going to care unless you went to Michigan.
Absolutely. Just like Nebraska will be 9-2 and not make a big bowl game.
There you go. The two that come to mind, Toby Gerhardt, I agree, in Jacksonville is a nice pick. Actually, I'm going to throw another one at Rashard Jennings, who was very solid with the Raiders and with Jacksonville over the last couple of years, going to finally get his first real starting chance in New York. And despite as bad as the Giants have looked, it was a solid pickup considering what happened with David Wilson. The other name I kind of want to throw out there is a guy who has no name reputation at all, but it looks like he may be starting over Reggie Bush in this Joy K. Bell in Detroit. Probably fits Jim Caldwell's offense a little bit better than Bush does. And he's going very, very, very low in drafts. So,
well, let me ask you this. You just mentioned Rashard Jennings, who came over from Oakland via Jacksonville. And I think that that's a good pick, but do you even think by, week four he's going to be starting? I mean, Andre Williams has played very well in preseason. Granted, preseason is not the end-all, be-all, as we all know, when the Jets went 5-0 and then went 1-15 in the regular season. But the fact is, he's playing well. The team needs some youth. And granted, they did sign Jennings to a pretty nice deal. I mean, not a great deal, but a pretty nice deal. Williams is more between the tackles. I mean, and that offensive line stinks.
Well, that's also part of it. Jennings is a solid all-around running back. Can catch had 40 catches out of the backfield last year. Can block. And Andre Williams is the future running back in New York. He's looked solid in preseason. He's made a couple nice plays in the preseason games. And he was also a borderline Heisman candidate. I think he may have led the country in rushing. If not, he was pretty close at BC last year.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it does take some time, especially in an offense where there's – remember, this is a new offense for everybody. And I think the familiarity that Jennings is going to have just having been played around the league. Whereas you're not having a new guy come in and 10 guys are going to help him join. Pretty much everyone has to learn this new offense now. I think this will be Jennings' job for the year. I would not be surprised to see a year or 2 years down the line, though, that Andre Williams is the starting running back for the Giants.
I mean, moving to the West Coast, Ryan Matthews, a guy last year that was a solid pickup in PPR leagues was Danny Woodhead. And he's on San Diego. But San Diego just signed Donald Brown as well, who, granted, was not the first rounder that everybody in Indianapolis wanted. But I think that may take into a couple of the Woodhead touches. So be careful if you're looking for Danny Woodhead for PPR and for returns. Returns he'll get, but the PPR, not so much. Now, the one division that I always shortchange, every single year, nonstop, always shortchange, except for last year in our league where I actually went big on it, where we went big on it, so we got busted anyway, is wide receiver. Most fantasy teams have two wideouts and a flex. Some have three wideouts and a flex. In the Bob the Owls League, there are three wideouts. And it's hard to spend money, that much money on wideouts, but it needs to be done. And you need to look for guys, especially in PPR leagues, that are going to catch the ball. They may not get the yardage, but guys that I love are Brandon Marshall, Ashlon Jeffrey, Antonio Brown, Vincent Jackson, and Pierre Garçon. And Pierre Garçon, I believe, is the most underrated player in the wide receiver category. He doesn't get the name recognition, but especially with DeSean Jackson there, he's going to get a lot of catches.
Well, there's a lot of things you can discuss when it comes to wideouts. I was actually talking with a pretty knowledgeable fantasy guy out west this morning, and we were saying that he often will draft the tight end as almost make the tight end one, kind of consider him almost the second A wide receiver, where he drafts a Graham or a Gronkowski or a Julius Thomas instead of the second tier, instead of the number two wideout, and kind of utilizes that strategy, which is kind of an interesting way to do it. You pretty much named every receiver from number six through number 10 in my wideout world. Antonio Brown is an absolute stud in Pittsburgh. Marshall and Jeffrey are the best tag team in the NFL. Pierre Garçon has just not gotten any publicity playing in Washington because of, well, everything else that's happened in Washington, but I believe he broke 100 catches last year. I really like Keenan Allen in San Diego. To say I like A.J. Green is kind of seems stupid because everybody likes A.J. Green. Kendall Wright is an interesting, you brought up Jake Locker. Kendall Wright had, if I believe, 95 catches and 1,000 yards last year. You know, you have Emmanuel Sanders becoming Eric Decker in Denver, just speedier. There's so much, such an overabundance of wideout talent that it's really difficult. It's sometimes, after you get through that first five, it's very difficult to distinguish on where you really should go, or it is for me as well. Anyway.
Okay, so who's your breakout guy this year? Who's the guy that's going to be – who's your breakout guy, and who's the guy that's going to create a tumble?
The breakout guy, and I think this has been a pretty – I'm actually going to go with a little bit different. I was going to go Cordarrelle Patterson, but I think everyone is going with Cordarrelle Patterson. I'm going to go with Michael Floyd from Arizona. He's not going to get the number one quarterback because that still goes to Larry Fitzgerald. You have a quarterback with a huge arm in Carson Palmer. It looks like you finally may have a running game where they're going to have to respect it in Andre Ellington. And Michael Floyd just puts up numbers, I think he's going to put up some big numbers this year. So that would be the one that I really see jumping up. The person I see that I think is overrated, I guess the other name I should actually throw out there, if he's healthy, is Jeremy Maclin in Philly. He would have been the number one last year, or 1A
if he hadn't gotten hurt, DeSean Jackson had a nice year there, but not really from a fantasy perspective. And he's someone who I would avoid in fantasy. He seems to have four or five big plays a season and then gets you about five catches for 46 yards the rest of it. Trying to think who else. Andre Johnson just seems to be fading out in Houston. You may want to look at DeAndre Hopkins instead. Those are the names that would come to mind.
All right. Well, for my guys that are going to make that jump, Tavon Austin in St. Louis, I think this is the year he makes that jump. I love Cecil Shorts. And besides having a fantastic name, the fact is he's the only guy that they can throw to there. It's him and Marquise Hill. And we all know how much I wanted Marquise Hill on my team, but he didn't happen to get there. For the guys that I think are going to take a step back, oh, by the way, Dez Bryant becomes better than Calvin Johnson to me this year. This is the year he takes that giant leap forward. Now, granted, we've been saying this a couple of years, but this is his contract year. And everybody knows Michael Irvin loved the contract year. And this is Michael Irvin's protege. I think this is the year that he steps it up. The guys that take steps back, Andre Johnson, you had mentioned. Larry Fitzgerald. I know you like Michael Floyd. I understand you like Michael Floyd. I don't think either of them is a number one this year in fantasy football.
Well, that doesn't mean anything. Wait. That doesn't mean it. By the way, I don't know how long we want to do the show for, but we have another half hour if we'd like, since this is going to probably run a little bit late.
What I'm saying is Larry Fitzgerald has been known as a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL.
Yes, but he is not a top 10 fantasy receiver. But he's not a top 10 fantasy receiver.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't believe he's a top 10 fantasy receiver. I don't even think he's a top 20 fantasy receiver. And I don't think Michael Floyd is either. I don't think either one of them is. First of all, I definitely think that Fitzgerald is on his way down. He's got a huge contract. I don't foresee him being in Phoenix more than this year. This is last year in Phoenix to me. I agree that Michael Floyd is going to take that step up, but I'd be surprised if either of them were mid-tier number twos. So in the top 20 wide receivers.
I think the difference is, if I understand your point. I think the difference is when you're looking at fantasy football right now, the fantasy football world is the wide receivers. There's such a ridiculous overabundance of them that to be at number 15 or number 20, I mean, versus number 40, to me, it's very fluid. It's very, very fun.
Well, let's look at this. I mean, I'm in ESPN's top 100 rankings, right?
Let me go take a look.
I understand, but I'm just going to say, so number 40 is Riley Cooper.
Okay, who had about 70 catches for about 1,000 yards. True?
Right. Number 36 is Terrence Williams.
Right,
number
who
20,
is number two, who's now the number two wideout in Dallas.
Agreed. Number 19 is Wes Welker. There's a big difference between Wes Welker and Terrence Williams to me.
Yes, but I would also have that would not be how I would do my rankings. If you go by these rankings, they have Larry Fitzgerald number 13, which you've said is nowhere near where he should be.
Agreed.
So it's hard. You know, I look at these. You know, your Javon Austin is number 49. That's fine. I have DeAndre Hopkins is the guy who's going to make a big jump this year, as I said. You know, you have the two indie guys at 27, 28. Would you be shocked if Reggie Wayne was a top 15 wideout this year if he was healthy? I don't think so. There's so much talent at the wide receiver right now. That's where everything is. It just makes strategy very difficult sometimes in that regard.
If you're in a 12-team league and you have three wide receivers, you got to get in the top 36 three guys. And I think that's very difficult to do.
This just in, hold on, another breaking news. Arizona Cardinals defensive tackle Darnell Dacca tears ACL and will be out for the season.
Which totally kill, kill their people. But between that and Darryl Washington's year-long suspension, they're in for a tough time in Arizona this year. What could have been a great team, really could have been a great team, unfortunately, is just not, I mean, anymore. At least in my opinion. So, I mean, you're right, though. I mean, Dwayne Bowe in this ranking is 44. I mean, would you be surprised if he was a top 20 receiver? I know you would, but I
would.
I said, I know you would.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. And Justin Hunter is 42. No, he's 45, and he's the second guy in Tennessee. And if Jake Locker proves my need to be prophetic, could be a top 15, top 20 guy too. I mean, I understand what you're saying. Got to get on these wideouts. I mean, you can't, once you get down, so if you have three teams and each team is on their third wideout and you don't have your second yet, you better be starting. Because once you get to the 50s, you're at, I mean, I'm just naming 50, I'll name 53 through 60. You're stuck starting James Jones in Oakland, Stevie Johnson in San Francisco, Andre Hawkins in Cleveland, who may not be bad because of return yards, Brandon LaFell in New England, or Doug Baldwin in Seattle. You don't want to put yourself in that type of situation.
No, but I mean, even looking below those, but you have names below that. Brian Hartline had 70, 80 catches last year in Miami. Marquise Lee is a rookie. Odell Beckham's a rookie. Kenny Stills is a rookie. Or Kenny Stills actually is the number two in New Orleans. You know, I mean, Jericho Cotchery and Kelvin Benjamin in 65, 66 are Carolina's probably could be starting wideouts.
You don't want to start these guys. These are not guys that you'd be looking to start. But so Hartline did have 76 catches for 1,000 yards, but I believe he had 250 in one game. So that's a little bit much to put there. But I agree with you. I'm just saying you said that fantasy is going to be based on your wideouts. I completely agree. I don't agree in spending a lot of money on them if you're in an auction league for the reasons that you said before, is that 20 is as good as 40. So let people bid on the 20. But you need to get in before number 50, to me.
Yeah, I think that's – well, very rarely are there going to be 50 wideouts taken. But, yeah, I see your – well, actually, that's not true. You're right. There are usually in a good 12-man league, if you're drafting 16 people per team, you're looking at 15 – you're looking at about 50 to 60 wideouts. So
yeah,
jumping on
if you're
to
playing
the,
three wideouts.
Yeah, exactly. So jumping on to the – what used to be the tight end position now just seems like wide receiver plus position because you have guys like Jimmy Graham, Julius Thomas, Gronk. Yeah, these are for all intents and purposes, these are wideouts that are in tight end. They're just suiting up as tight end to pretty much make that secondary nuts wherever they're playing against and create these nightmares. I think the one thing that nobody questions is the one position that nobody questions is that Jimmy Graham is the number one tight end in fantasy football. Where would you be going for the next few after that?
Well, let me ask you this first. If you're looking at Jimmy Graham as a wideout, which I do as well, okay, and I have him in one of my leagues, and I won't tell you what round I picked him in, but I will be protecting him. Say he's a wideout. Where does he fall in the wideout category? So I'm saying you're gonna pick him over how many wideouts are you picking over Jimmy Graham?
Probably somewhere between. I'd actually have to think about that for a second.
Because I think you're picking Calvin Johnson, right?
Yeah. You're not taking into respect the position that, you know, the importance of picking that position.
No, I absolutely am. I'm taking into account the position.
Oh, the only one you're taking is Calvin Johnson, and potentially, if you like Dez Bryant better, then maybe Dez Bryant. But the only one I've seen going before Jimmy Graham is.
So if you're on the board. And Calvin Johnson, you're in the second round, and Calvin Johnson is gone. and you're looking for a pass catcher, you're going to pick Jimmy Graham over any wide receiver.
Simply because you can place it at a tight end level.
Okay.
Simply because you can place him at a tight
end. Now let's say it's a flex where it's tight end and wide receiver. So one position.
Okay, if you're playing it at one position, then it's I would probably have him somewhere between somewhere around number 10, maybe 7 or 8.
Okay. I'm just curious because I'll tell you, so in my league in which I was the commissioner in, and now I believe we're in our 18th or 19th year, which is saying something for a league, I have Jimmy Graham. My choices are to protect Jimmy Graham in the second round without knowing where I'm drafting, or to protect Tony Romo in the fifth round, where touchdowns count for four. And I have decided to protect Graham in the second without knowing where I am, because I believe that from numbers 11 through 20, it's number 13 through 24, he's my best pick.
And I think that's very logical. And
that's where tight ends are a separate position. So you do get to count, you do get in your concept of different positions. So just a little tidbit out there, I do value Jimmy Graham incredibly high, especially in the fact that New Orleans has lost Darren Sproles. Now, they've gotten Brandon Cooks, but Brandon Cooks comes out of the slot. He doesn't come out of the backfield. And I think that Breeze is going to use I think he's going to use Jimmy Graham even more this year, and that's evidenced by the first preseason game where he scored two touchdowns.
And then dunked on both of them.
And got penalized on both.
And got fined.
Yes, he did. And Deshaun Payton was not happy about that at all. So our other concern here at Seth and Sean Sports Radio for our Keeper League is, are we to protect Jason Witten at 18 in the Nabate Isles, the infamous Nabate Isles league. And how many tight ends do you think are better than Jason Witten? Do you think that there are five at this year?
No. Off the top of my head, Julius Thomas in Denver, if Gronkowski is healthy. If Cleveland had a quarterback and a running game and Josh Gordon, I would consider throwing Jordan Cameron in there. But the reality is that nobody has stepped up of all these young tight ends. No one has stepped up to a point to pass the old guard led at this point by Jason Witten.
Well, we had talked previously about that Carolina has absolutely no weapons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they do. They have Greg Olsen. Greg Olsen had 73 catches, 816 yards, and 6 scores last year. Now, Witten did have over 100 catches. I don't dispute that. I just clicked on Olsen twice. I know he did. Hold on. Getting Witten stats. So I guess my question is, you only view three. No, Witten had 73 catches, so they had the even amount of catches, one more touchdown for Witten, and 20 more yards for Witten. So I guess my claim is if I can get an Olsen at 13 over a Witten at 18, you'd still prefer Witten at 18.
No, I would prefer to save the extra $5. And plus, Olsen is a Wayne, New Jersey guy, so I always kind of have an affinity for that.
I'm assuming that there are 12 teams in our league, which I think that there are. So the 12th tight end on this in the ESPN rankings is Delonnie Walker, and then Antonio Gates is 15, who probably will take a step back, and Kobe Flinger, who I actually like, is at 17. So which tight ends would you be comfortable with? Because as we have stated in this podcast or live show before, you have to go and get your guy, right? We can't, you can't lean, stay back and hope that the money is there at the end, as we found out last year when we bid $16 on Felix Jones at the end. Because
we really should stop bragging about the Felix Jones pick. It was certainly not one of our better moves.
I'm not bragging. I'm saying it was a bad move. So you live and you learn. So this year we're going to learn and we're going to go and get our guy. Which tight end do you want to go and get? Or do you want to keep Gates and Wynn?
There are a couple that I'd be happy with. Actually, surprisingly, because of how Norv Turner uses his tight ends, the idea of getting Kyle Rudolph is not looking too bad. Pitta in Baltimore, now that he's healthy, should be solid. Jordan Reed, if he's healthy, in Washington. The guy I really like to kind of take over for Mr. Gates, who is, of course, the best tight end in football, or one of the two best tight ends in football for several years, along with Tony Gonzalez, is Ladarius Green in San Diego. You may want to look at a Tyler Eifert. There's some depth down there after the top three or four. I'm not saying these are people I would take over Jason Witten, obviously, but there is a there is some talent in this position.
Yeah, I think in our strategery, we should be, if you're confident in getting a Rudolph, and I agree with you, North Turner tends to use his tight ends a lot. The one Jordan Cameron being a prime example last year in Cleveland. The one problem I have with drafting anybody in Minnesota outside of Adrian Peterson is they're playing outdoors this year. And that, they're playing outdoors, and the two guys that are going to be throwing in the ball are Matt Castle, who, as I said before, I'd still take over Eli Manning, and Teddy Bridgewater, who's a rookie. So depending on a tight end in a cold, cold Minnesota TGF stadium has my doubts. But we can certainly look for that. I mean, I think the thing that you have to understand in auction league, and we've discussed this, is not only going to get your guy, but throwing out guys you don't want in your auction league and hoping that people put good money for them. And I'm hoping that Seth agrees with me that the first person we should throw out next week would be Rob Gronkowski, because he may be the one guy I don't want.
Okay. Kind of moving forward, the defenses are so difficult to really gauge when you deal with the defenses and the kickers. And, Seattle has obviously gone off. Seattle has been the big pick this year, coming off their phenomenal year last year. San Francisco is always a solid pick, but to be honest, you lose Navarro Bowman, you lose Alden Smith. What are you really looking at? It's a good defense, nothing spectacular.
I think San Francisco actually takes a step back.
I agree.
They lost Glenn Dorsey for the year as well. Well, at least for the majority of the year. Justin Smith is a year older. Alden Smith is probably going to be suspended for a couple of games. Navarro Bowman is out for the entire, well, maybe not the entire year, but definitely the first six games he'll be put on the PUP list. Yeah, I definitely think they take a step back. And once you're done with the teams, I'll talk more to the individual players.
Trying to think what else we got here. Sean, actually, I have to, and I apologize to our listeners, the last 5 to 10 minutes, I have a personal emergency. I need to get off. Sean, can you handle the defense and the kickers?
Sure, absolutely. Okay.
I apologize, everybody. I'll see you all next week.
We'll bid adieu to Seth, and we'll hope that everything's going well with him. I'll go through the personal players, the defensive players first, and we'll talk to that. And the thing that you have to understand with defensive players in the NFL when you're talking about fantasy is that they get points based on tackles, assists, and sacks, and interceptions. And there are some teams that – so tackles are actually a statistic kept by the home team. So it's the home team that generates, that decides who gets the tackles and how many. And history dictates that there are two teams that actually generate more tackles statistically than any other teams. And those are the Pittsburgh Steelers and the New York Jets. So if you're looking for individual players for tackles, and you can't get a Luke Kuechly, who Seth and I had last year and certainly was definitely the apple of our eye, I would look for Ryan Shazier out in Pittsburgh. He seems to be the guy out there, and I'd like him. I do like David Harris, and I like Muhammad Wilkerson for an individual player. We're not going to go through kickers other than you should take Legatron in St. Louis. Anybody that's an indoor kicker, you should be taking. Okay, so we went over 10 more minutes. We're going to say goodbye today. Next week on the show is our college football preview, followed by our NFL preview on Labor Day. And for Seth Kamens, this has been Sean Palmer, Seth and Sean Sports Radio on BackSportsNation.com and Blog Talk Radio. So we will see you all next week. See ya.